Good afternoon. Today I'm going to talk about Spain, a way to build high bisection bandwidth data center Ethernet with unmodified switches so that you can go and deploy today with very low cost. This is a work done in collaboration with Jairam Mudiganda and Jeff Mogul at HP Labs and with Mohamed Alfarez at UCSD. So traditional enterprise data centers typically hosted one or few internet-facing applications, such as employee email servers and web servers, where most of the traffic either originated or destined to host outside the data center. But recently, there are a couple of trends that is changing this traffic scenario. So one is the amount of information explosion that the enterprises are seeing lots and lots of information, which means basically they're moving to using high-performance computing applications like MapReduce, et cetera, to mine through that data. The second trend is a severe application consolidation going in the enterprise data centers. So there is a lot of usage of virtualization for efficiently utilizing data centers to host a large number of applications. And these new kind of applications are posing different kind of requirements on the data center fabric. So consider the MapReduce case. During the shuffle phase, the data computed by the map job needs to be sent to all the reduced jobs in the in your system. So during the shuffle phase, there is a large amount of intra-server communication. So you need high bisection bandwidth in the data center. And if you consider the virtualization example, you would like to move your virtual machines around in your data center for, say, power minimization or for some kind of consolidation. So in this case, you want a flat network so that you can place your virtual machines as you would like on your data center network. So these are the data center fabric goals. You want very high bisection bandwidth, and you want a flat network, and you would like a low-cost network, obviously. So Ethernet makes a good choice for building your data center Ethernet, data center network. It's commodity, so that means it's inexpensive. 10 gig is around. The 10 gig port costs are going down day by day, and 40 gig and 100 gig are around the corner. And it's Ethernet is a flat address network, so that solves the virtualization problem. And also, there is the self-configuring property of the Ethernet. But wait, I wouldn't be standing here if Ethernet solved all your problems. So spanning tree that Ethernet runs to minimize the broadcast problems, to basically not have any loops in the network topology, makes Ethernet hard to scale. So let me show an example. So you have a nice, very highly redundant network with lots of bandwidth available between the end host, and you go and construct such a network using Ethernet switches that you bought from the store. You turn it on, what happens? The spanning tree protocol runs and restricts, disables lot of links and restricts all the traffic to only few links in the network. So there will be a lot of unused links, and also you'll have bandwidth bottlenecks. So what do? There have been several proposals in the over the time. So one common approach is to use a very high port core switch. This is like the standard Cisco and other common approaches used in the current data centers, where you basically buy a big hunking switch and put it in the core and connect all your rack switches to this big hunking switch with high bandwidth links or multiple links. But the problem is these core switches are expensive. So as the port count goes up, the cost of the switches actually go up almost exponentially. The second approach that people have looked at are based on L3, like IP subnetting, and then there was VL2 paper at SIGCOM 09 based on fat tree topology. But these approaches require that you change all your switches in the network and replace them with L3 routers, which are expensive and in some cases cannot support non-IP protocols such as fiber channel over Ethernet, which is a common protocol used in data centers for storage traffic. And the third proposal is to modify the switches altogether, either hardware or software. So Trill, which is an IETF working group, and Seattle that was proposed at SIGCOM 08, these two define a totally new switch architecture where you totally toss away the spanning tree protocol and build new switches where you can get better utilization out of your network. And Portland presented at SIGCOM 09 uses fat tree, and it also gets around the problems of spanning tree. But all these protocols need, all these proposals need changes to these switches, either at the hardware or software, which means you can't deploy them right now. In contrast to this, our goals for Spain is to work with unmodified switches, and we'd like to get multipathing so that we can leverage all that redundancy that you can build. And we want to work with arbitrary topologies and not restrict ourselves to a specific topology so that you can go and need not to build a new topology, throw away your existing equipment, or throw away existing network. So the main ideas of our approach are we get multipathing via VLANs. So we compute paths and lay out VLANs on the network. And then we leverage those VLANs by end host modifications. So let me again show with an example. So you have the same old network, but I'll focus my attention on to just four servers, A, B, C, D. And you have this default VLAN. So note that VLANs are virtual LANs, and we are not using it from in the traditional sense of isolation, but using it to get the multipathing. So what we do is you can construct paths. So in this case, I'm constructing two paths, a red and green path, and I can set up them as two VLANs. And now the A and C can use those VLANs and communicate with the B and D using these VLANs. And the other nodes can still use the default VLAN to communicate. So you can create a lot of VLANs and spread load across your network and get the bandwidth out of it. So in brief summary, Spain gets you a high bandwidth, low cost data center Ethernet that you can deploy today. By using unmodified L2 switches, we get multipathing via VLANs, works with arbitrary topologies, and we do minor end host modifications. So I have introduced what Spain is. Now I'll move on to talk about the components of Spain. How do we compute the paths? How do you layer the VLANs? And how do you use those VLANs from the end host? And then talk about the evaluation of our system, and then conclude. So to start off with the offline computation part, so this involves three steps. One is to discover what topology you already have, what topology you have hooked up your switches in your data center, and then we compute the paths and lay them out as VLANs. Discovering topology is easy. So we have run SNMP queries from a server that talks to the switches and figures out the topology. And this can be either be done at that time, or this information can be grokked from, say, if you have a already existing network manager such as OpenView. And then once you have this topology, the second step is to compute paths. So the goal is to leverage the redundancy and provide reliability. So you want to create as many paths as you want between the edge, between the end hosts. But the challenges are that these graphs can be very large. And also you want to have as few paths as possible because the laying out the paths uses up resources on the switches. So you want to compute few paths that will give you better redundancy, that leverage redundancy, and also improve the reliability of the paths. So what do? We only consider paths between the edge switches, so that because those are the only paths that we really care about, and those are the only paths that we want to expose. So this reduces the graph size. And then we have an algorithm that's based on Dijkstra, which repeatedly runs Dijkstra, and every run we increment the cost of the already computed paths. And what this algorithm does is basically it prefers the edge disjoint paths because those are the paths that give you better bisection bandwidth. So in this case, I'm showing the paths that you compute between one pair of switches, and we compute basically these paths between every pair of those edge switches. So once we have computed the paths, the second step is to lay them out as VLANs. And a simple scheme, as I was mentioning previously, was basically you take each of those paths and set them up as a virtual LAN. But the problem is the VLAN IDs in the VLAN protocol is defined as a 12-bit field. That means you can't have more than 4,096 VLANs. So the simple scheme of laying out each of those paths as a VLAN cannot scale beyond a few set of switches. But we leverage an observation and we use it in our approach, which is that you can merge several paths into one VLAN. So consider two paths, red and green path. We can merge them into one VLAN because they don't form a loop, and switches forward the packets based on both MAC address and also the VLAN. So they don't just forward the packets on based on VLAN, but also the destination address that's there in the packet. Now the problem is we have these large number of paths that we have computed. How do we compose them into sets of subgraphs or subtrees? This problem is NP-hard for a general arbitrary topology and for arbitrary set of paths. So as far as any NP-hard problem, we basically devise two different heuristics, a greedy path packing heuristic and a parallel graph coloring heuristic. The first one basically packs as many paths into each VLAN as possible. And the second one is a parallel approach where we use graph coloring heuristics to solve the problem. I'll not go into details of these heuristics. Please look at our paper for the details. But running these heuristics on our topology, example topology, you'll end up with these four VLANs. For this simple topology of folded cloths, it's easy, actually. You can manually lay out these VLANs in this fashion, and you'll know that all the edge-to-edge, edge-switch-to-edge switch paths that you care about are covered in these VLANs. And we see that when we run our algorithm, that basically gives the same result as you expect. Now, once our algorithms compute these VLANs, it contacts the switches and lays out, sets up all the VLANs. And the next part is using at the runtime by the end host. And this is done by the end host, pane end host driver that's running on all the end hosts. So again, I'll restrict my attention in this picture to just two end hosts, A and B. So hosts A and B, when they boot up, they contact a central database where you store the topology and VLAN information. And this can be distributed as DHCP options too, but here I'm just showing it as for simplicity. Also, nodes maintain a flow table mapping flow to VLAN information. So let's suppose host A has a flow one, and it's destined to host B. So it has option of four VLANs, either blue, gray, blue, green, red, or orange. And in this case, let's suppose it picks a red VLAN. So it starts, it paints the packet as with red and puts the VLAN tag red on it and starts sending it. Now if it has another flow to host B, and we'll call it flow two, then it can pick another VLAN so that it can distribute the load across multiple VLANs. And this is the basic mechanism. So end host, whenever it has a new flow, it checks what VLANs it can use and starts using that VLAN. And if you have multiple VLANs, it starts distributing different flows across those VLANs. There are several challenges that need to be solved to really use this in real system. And here I list several of those: failures, pathological flooding, interoperability with non-span hosts, and host mobility, handling host mobility, load balancing across multiple VLANs that each host has, and then maintaining the end host state. For this talk, I will focus on the first two challenges, link and switch failures and pathological flooding. For both these problems, we have a single solution. So I'll first describe the problems and then describe the solution. Failures is easy to understand. So you have let's suppose node A is talking to node B, and suddenly one of the link fails. So all the packets start getting dropped. If it's a TCP flow, our end host driver can monitor and look at, oh, there are retransmits going on and there are no acknowledgments coming back, and can at that point switch to another VLAN. But in case of non-TCP flow or non-IP flows, this particular aspect won't solve that. And the second issue I was talking about is pathological flooding. So previously I've shown a simple idea of how SPAN works, but in reality, switches learn as they see the packets. So let's suppose the top switches don't know where the destination is. So when host A sends its first packet, the top switch, let's suppose it doesn't know the location of B, and what does this switch do? It basically floods. That's what switches do. So in this case, node B, to talk to A, uses a green VLAN. So all the packets, in this case, coming from back from B will go on the rightmost switch. So what happens is this top left switch will never get to know where host B is located. So all the packets going from host A to B will forever be flooded in this case. So what do? We have a solution which we call chirping. Again, I'll show with an example how chirping works. So initially, the left top switch doesn't know where host B is. So whenever a host receives a packet on a VLAN and it hasn't sent back any packet to that source of that packet, then it sends a dummy packet. It creates a dummy packet which we call chirp and sends it back on that path. This effectively teaches the switches on the path about where that host is located. So once the switches on the path know about location of B, all the packets start flowing without getting flooded. And this scheme also solves the fault tolerance issue because hosts don't send this chirp packet periodically so that the switches learn about the location of the host. So in this case, when the red link is failed, the chirp packet from B is lost, and host A now switches its flow to another VLAN, in this case, blue VLAN, and starts sending the packets on blue VLAN. So this way, chirping helps for both pathological flooding and also for fault tolerance. Now I'll move on to talk about our evaluation. So we have done several simulations, and we have implemented a real Spain end driver, a kernel module, and did several experiments with that. Though real testbed we have done on specific small testbed, simulations allowed us to look at like a variety of topologies. So we have looked at two-tier Cisco data center topologies that Brandon was showing too, which is a three-layer topology, and we have parameterized all these topologies. We also experimented with fat tree topology that was in SIGCOM 2008, and this is parameterized on the port count of switches. And we have looked at HyperX, which is a topology proposed in Supercomputing Journal, and this is parameterized on K, which is the dimension length in the two-dimension topology. And we also looked at the B-cube that was proposed at SIGCOM 2009. So all these topologies are parameterized on different parameters, and we have looked at different metrics, how many VLANs are needed to lay out paths on these topologies, what's the link coverage, reliability, and throughput, and we compared it against the spanning tree protocol. For this talk, again, I will look at only number of VLANs and the throughput. And here I show the number of VLANs that were needed when we run our algorithms for different parameters of these topologies. I'll want you to look at the fat tree and HyperX. So in case of fat tree, 48 port switches with 2,880 switches, we needed only 576 VLANs because as we could figure out that just drawing a spanning tree rooted at each of the core switches will cover all the paths that we care about. And in the case of HyperX, which is like a hypercube, you have large number of paths between any pair of edge switches. So we needed a lot more VLANs compared to the number of switches in the topology. So depending on the topology, there is a different requirement of how many VLANs we need to cover that topology. And talking about the throughput, we have done simulation study where we had several millions of backlogged flows running between uniformly chosen source and destination hosts on these topologies. And here I compare the throughput observed with Spain and compare it against the throughput that's observed when we run it with spanning tree protocol. So we see tremendous improvement, particularly in cases where there is a lot of redundancy. In case of Cisco DC, there is only a little bit of redundancy, so we see a little bit improvement, but fat tree and HyperX, where there is a lot of redundancy, we see tremendous improvement. Moving on to the real testbed experiments, we have done our experiments on HP Lab's OpenCirrus testbed, where we picked three racks of servers containing 80 blades overall across these three racks. And each of these racks had a switch connected to these blades at 1 gig link. And then we had a core switch that was connecting to these rack switches at 10 gig bandwidth. For the rest of the talk, I'll just use these circles to denote this topology. So initially, when we started using this topology, looked at the OpenCRS testbed, we observed that even though S1, S2, S3, the switches in the racks had spare ports, they weren't using those spare ports because spanning tree would have disabled them anyway. But since Spain can use those, we went ahead and added these three links, these 10 gig links between these three rack switches. And we did our offline computation algorithm. We ran it on this topology, and we found that with four VLANs, we could expose all the paths that we care about in this topology. Now, for the experiment we ran on the end host was a shuffle-like experiment, where we move 500 MB of data from every server to all other servers in the testbed. And in case of spanning tree, when we run the spanning tree and setup, as expected, the bottom three links, the links that we added, were disabled. And I'm showing the utilization that you see on each of those links. So each of those blobs show the link utilization on each link in each direction. So 0% is at the middle, and 100% is at the top and bottom. And as you can see in the spanning tree protocol, the top three links, which were the only ones that are enabled and used by the spanning tree protocol, are overloaded, and the bottom three links are unused. In contrast, when we run Spain, we see basically loads nicely spread across all the links, and there are no bottlenecks in the system. Actually, we observed that the servers weren't enough. The servers were actually wimpy to not be able to fully utilize all the links in the testbed that we have. So just looking at the raw numbers, in the shuffle completion time, the time it took to complete the shuffle experiment, we, in case of spanning tree, against spanning tree, we observed like almost half reduction in the completion time. And in the case of aggregate good put, the amount of bandwidth that we were able to drive through this network, we see 87% improvement. We saw 66.7 Gbps bisection bandwidth in contrast in Spain, in contrast to 35.6 that you can get with spanning tree protocol. Another experiment that we did was to check the incremental deployability aspect of Spain. So where we install the Spain end host driver only on a fraction of nodes. So on x-axis, I show the fraction of nodes on which Spain is installed. And on y-axis, I'm showing the aggregate good put that we observe. As expected, as we increase the number of hosts that are Spain-enabled, we see better and better good put in the system. This demonstrates that we don't need to change all the hosts in the data center. Even if you can change a set of hosts in your data center and enable them with Spain, we can get better throughput. And the last experiment that I'm going to talk about is single shortest path. This is what Seattle or Trill, the new Ethernet technologies, will give you. So if you run those, they will use the single shortest path, the shortest path between the servers. And in this case, what that means is that the bottom three links will be utilized, and the top three links will not be utilized. And we could actually emulate this with Spain, where we say all the flows starting at the switch S1 take the red VLAN, and all the flows starting at S3 take the green VLAN, and for S2 take the gray VLAN. So by doing this, we could emulate, we could do Seattle by Trill with Spain. And note that Seattle and Trill require changes to the Ethernet if you really wanted to adopt those fully. But when we did our shuffle experiment, Spain was able to do 16% better in case of completion time and 7% better in case of good put. So it not only matches these forthcoming technologies, but also actually beat them in this particular test bed. So to conclude, the Spain takeaway is that you are having more and more need for higher bisection bandwidth in data centers. And Spain provides you a way to build low-cost, high-bandwidth data center that you can deploy today. And we do this with unmodified switches. We get multipathing via VLANs. And it works with any kind of topology, with arbitrary topologies. And we make minor end host modifications. So that concludes my talk. I'm happy to take any questions. So in the meantime, one of the co-authors asked me to show this slide. So please submit if you have any interesting papers to ANCS.
OK, questions?
Hi, I'm Ian Vedat, UC San Diego. Very nice talk. I especially like the aspect of having this multipathing work on unmodified switches. I want to go back to your motivation, however, and your comparison to VL2 and Portland.
OK.
Starting with VL2, for fairness, I guess.
Okay.
You mentioned one of the differences is that this is going to require IP routers, which are more expensive than switches, and they might not support FCOE. What if there were a future world that might be happening, say now, where all commodity switches supported layer 3 and supported FCOE out of the box? So let me take the second part. Relative to Portland, one of the differences is you require switch modifications. In the case of Portland, it's you need open flow support. So what if there were a future world that's happening, say, now, where commodity switches all support open flow? How would you re-examine the differences to Portland and VL2 in such a setting?
Okay. So here I was being, for L3 approaches, the L3 routers being expensive than the L2 switches is based on the fact that even if, when we look at the ProCurve, basically price sheet, to get OSPF and ECMP features, you need to pay out more than if you want to just buy the basic switch.
So that ProCurve might not be the right model for the pricing, though, correct?
It depends on who is going to build these data centers. If it's a big company that's going to build data centers like Microsoft or Google, yeah, they can go and buy, get commodity silicon and have like people write software for it. But if you're talking about a large number of these SMB kind of small medium businesses, you are basically going and getting contract with a small technology company who's going to buy off the shelf switches and set up data center for you. So in that case, I see basically there is a reason to not depend on L3 technologies if possible, so that you can basically buy it. I mean, even if you consider any average cost between like routers and switches, I would say still the router cost is expensive than switch cost, right?
I think that the distinction is actually amount of available buffering on chip, not router versus switches. Right? In other words, if you're buying something that's going to go into the core of the network that, and you need multiple gigabytes of memory, that's where you're going to pay for the functionality. But if you're going to go buy something from Broadcom or Blade Networks or your favorite other vendor, it actually doesn't matter if you have L2 or L3 functionality. It's all the same as far as the silicon's concerned today.
Still, there is the difference, right? Like for L3, you need to have the best match prefix. They do have. So I'm not saying that they don't have. They do have. But is that the number of entries that they are going to have same as the number of FIB entries that you are going to have in switch?
They'll be limited, 64K. So it's not going to go into the core of the network.
It's 64K BMP in Broadcom's or basically commodity silicon, probably. But so with respect to VL2, there is another difference that I want to point out is VL2 works with the fat tree topology or multi-layered tree topology. And one of the things that we wanted was to move away from having any single type of topology and just look at arbitrary topologies. And with respect to L2, L3 question, I guess, the difference between having a solution that works with L2, I think gives a nice solution in the overall solution space that you will have. I mean, you can have L3 solution and L2 solution, I think, and this basically provides a solution at the L2 layer. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Albert, do you have a question? Yes. Albert?
Hi. Yeah. So we had a paper a while back called Monsoon where we tried the VLAN tricks.
Okay.
And we went away from it because we were worried about two topics that you talked about, scale and reliability. We thought that the control plane already provides L3 control plane or or L3 re-implemented it in NL2, like in Trill, that already provides built-in monitoring. And L3 also provides the scale. So rather than, you know, using the VLANs, why not just go for scale and reliability directly built in and tested?
So I'm not sure. Basically, you will not have reliability with VLANs. So Cisco has its PVSD, which is proprietary. IEEE working group working on the MSTP, which is still, they support only 64 groups at this point. But if you are running PVSD, then you get enough reliability because you can run per VLAN spanning tree at that point. And it automatically configures, repairs your spanning tree for that VLAN. So by working with weights on the links, you can set up these VLANs and run PVSD and let it take care of the reliability issues. So that said, we haven't played with that because PVSD is a Cisco proprietary protocol and we didn't play with that. But MSTP is one of the future things that we are looking at, like basically using MSTP and try to fix the VLAN issues, reliability issues. But for this work, again, we have control over the end host. That's where we have been trying to get around the reliability issues. And with respect to fault tolerance, you might have one or two links go down, but drastic topology changes, we handle them as a separate case. And for simple link failures, you can always switch to another VLAN.
Okay, I think that's probably answered the question. Okay, let's thank the speaker again.